streets of Minnesota. 2 weeks till Election Day. Man, that is coming up fast, but looking forward to it. Looking forward to hopefully a blue wave that's happening. Any good news? Apparently 538 now projects Democrats with an 86% chance of winning the House of Representatives. So there you go, some good news there. But of course, we knew how those polls turned out back in 2016, but I like our chances. 86% chance, or 6-7 chance is what they're saying in terms of Dems taking the House. Senate not looking so good. They say only a 20% chance Democrats win the Senate, but there you go. Take that for whatever you will. But if we get just one of those back, yeah, it'll put some restraints on Donald Trump, won't it? By the way, Hunter, how you doing in there today?
I'm really good.
The Red Sox, huh? I know Matt commented on that. Yeah, you're a Red Sox fan, huh?
I'm a fair-weather baseball fan.
Fair-weather, yeah, there you go. Okay.
I abandoned the Twins when they originally got rid of Torrey Hunter. I was like, I'm done with this. This is what it's going to be the rest of my life. I'm just over it. Mm-hmm. And then I moved out east and adapted good teams.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to find too many good teams in Minnesota.
I mean, I have to deal with enough with my just deep love of the Vikings. It's painful enough. I have to deal with this, the Democratic Party always disappointing me. So I can't do every sport in Minnesota.
You need to be a Patriots fan and a Republican. That'd be the way to live, wouldn't it?
God. Yeah. Ish.
No. That just, yeah, it kind of made you vomit in your mouth a little bit thinking about that, huh? Yeah. So how about this transition? We didn't even plan this, but I was actually going to talk a little Vikings in the first segment for a certain reason, because do you remember, of course, back in the NFC Championship when the Vikings were in Philadelphia and how bad some of the fans behaved towards Vikings fans in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. being harassed, getting stuff thrown at them? You remember that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, a Vikings fan in New York did not have a very good experience yesterday. As it turns out, her rental car actually got burned down completely in the New York, New Jersey Meadowlands area. So this is a Vikings fan named Gina Smith. The Star Tribune is reporting this. Smith was on a trip to Boston to celebrate her birthday and decided it would be fun to make a day trip to New York for the Vikings-Jets game. And she said her group bought a parking pass at MetLife Stadium and went into the game and watched the Vikings win 37-17. And man, was that win crazy there yesterday.
Yeah,
I mean,
was great.
If you were moving from right to left, you pretty much had no passing game at all. But that's as much strategy as I'll talk for football, since this is a political talk show. But she says, quote, "It wasn't until the game was over and we went to go find our car and we were like, hey, where's our car? It should have been right there. But then they saw this burned out junker and no one gave us any information, but there was someone's grill right next to the car and we could tell exactly what happened. Someone apparently accidentally burned down their car." Now, the headline they had was a little misleading because it made it sound like the Jets fans actually intentionally burned down this Vikings fan's car. But apparently it was because someone just let their grill running during tailgating.
Oh.
So that's what happened. And a few other cars got burned as well. Because initially I saw this and I thought, man, East Coast fans, what are you doing out there?
I was confused because it was a rental car, so how would anyone know that it was a Viking fan? So that makes a lot more sense. That's the first time I heard that. It was kind of random.
And I know if you don't like sports, I'm getting to the point about why I'm talking about this, but here's where the story gets kind of interesting, is that according to NJ.com, I think that's the New Jersey newspaper, there were two separate fires at MetLife Stadium lots on Sunday impacting seven cars. So again, as we said, it wasn't just the Vikings fans' car that got burned. But here's where things start to get a little hairy. The rental company suggested she and her group take a taxi home instead of giving her a new car, which wasn't exactly possible given they were 4 hours away from Boston. Police also arrived and made a report, but according to Smith, they said the incident is beyond their jurisdiction because it happened on MetLife Stadium property, but they also told them that the stadium isn't liable for things that happen on their property. So basically, they're having a dispute with MetLife Stadium about who's going to pay for the damages to this car, because what Smith, who is the fan, the Vikings fan that had her car burned, she didn't buy that rental car insurance. which is interesting because here's what happens whenever I rent a car. I was always under the impression, my parents taught me this too, is that don't ever buy the car rental insurance if you have good car insurance, because generally it's kind of a ripoff. You're getting coverage you don't really need. But this kind of makes me think maybe you should actually buy that car insurance, because it sounds like Geno Smith is kind of out of luck here, because the Meadowlands, the New York Stadium, is saying they're not going to pay for the damage that was done to this rental car. They have no proof, and she doesn't have rental insurance, so wow, can you imagine that? So that's, I don't know, do you rent cars very often? I know you just turned 30, so what's what now, 5 years you can now rent cars?
I have rented quite a few cars because I've moved a lot, so...
Did you ever buy that rental insurance?
I absolutely never buy that.
Yeah, see, same with me. But now that kind of makes me rethink. Maybe I should buy that insurance from now on. I don't. Yeah.
I still think most times you're not going to get your car on fire. And there's still a chance, like you're saying, that your insurance will work for it. Kind of depends on what insurance you have, I think. Sounds like she kind of got a really bad deal, though.
Yeah, that's what at least my friends and family have told me, saying, don't ever buy that insurance. Generally, your car insurance will cover rental cars. Now, of course, you can look at your policy specifically and see that, if they cover rentals or not, but that was kind of the impression I was under. So I don't know if we have anyone out there who works in the car rental industry or has any insight into this. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. But it does beg the question, should you actually buy that rental insurance when you rent a car? Kind of making me rethink that subject. But again, as you said, Hunter, the chances of you going to a stadium at a sporting event and having your car burned down by someone's grill due to a tailgating accident, that's pretty small. It's about the same amount of chance of Jim Neuberger beating Amy Klobuchar this fall, I think. Yeah, there we go. There's my little joke for the day. I'm no stand-up comedian, but I figure I'd throw that one in there. So now, getting into politics, there has been some new polling data that has been released, and the big takeaway from this new Star Tribune poll is saying that both the governor's race and the special election Senate race are apparently narrowing, as they now show. We'll start off with the special election Senate race between incumbent Senator Tina Smith and her challenger, Republican Karen Housley. The new poll shows that it's only a 47-41 race. This compares to the last time they polled, which was, looking at the margin here, it was about a 10-point margin last time they did this poll. So apparently this one is tightening, and the Star Tribune kind of telling the same story with the governor's race as well, as they found Tim Walz, the Democrat, leading Jeff Johnson, the Republican, by a 45-39 margin. And that compares to the last time the Star Tribune did this poll in mid-September, when it showed Walz with a 9-point lead. Now, again, this gets back to one of my pet peeves with the Star Tribune polling, because for years they have been notoriously inaccurate with their polls, and it hasn't necessarily been because they've been biased for Republicans or for Democrats. I'll go through and cite these again of a couple of examples where they've been completely way off, including the kicker going back to the 2016 primary and caucus between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. But just a few examples, just so you don't get too paranoid about this Star Tribune poll. Going back to 2008, the Star Tribune in mid-September had Obama and McCain tied in Minnesota, and we of course knew how that race turned out. It was Obama winning significantly in Minnesota. 2012, they had Obama only beating Romney by 2 points in Minnesota. Obama actually won it by 8 points. And to show that they've also underestimated Republican performance, in 2008, they actually had Franken beating Coleman by 9 points. Of course, that went down to just a few hundred votes. And I'm sure there's lots of Republicans out there that are still saying, where are the votes in the trunk of Al Franken's car? Remember that back in 2008, all that controversy?
Yeah.
Then in 2010, they also had Dayton beating Emmer by 9 points. That one also was a recount election. But the main event was still 2016. I still don't know how they got this wrong by this much, because they only did this poll between Hillary and Bernie 6 weeks out. They had Hillary Clinton beating Bernie Sanders by 34 points in Minnesota. Bernie actually won by 23, meaning they missed that result by 57 points. That is 5-7, 57 points. I understand polling's not perfect, but how do you miss something by 57 percentage points?
I'm glad you brought that up, because this is my theory. I really think that it's going to be a bigger blue wave than any of these polls are saying, because they are so bad at predicting that progressive vote that you just talked about. That's why it was so thrown off, because these are people that don't vote every election, but when they show up, they show up. And this is going to be an election where it's going to be, they're going to be completely wrong on these polls. I'm calling that. And the one thing I think is that, I don't know if the Democrats will take back the Senate, but I do think Beto O'Rourke will win, actually.
If he wins Texas, I think they win the Senate.
I still think it could be end up being 50-50 with him winning, but I do think he is going to win from just looking at it. And the polls are making the same mistake that they always do when progressives are excited and young people are excited.
Yeah, generally it's because they kind of have a discrepancy between registered voters and likely voters. Because if you say, well, I voted in 2008, but I didn't vote in 10, 12, 14, or 16, you still give your answer on the poll, but most pollsters are going to discount you saying, well, you're not a likely voter. Yeah. So maybe that's the case coming up during this election cycle. And that's an interesting thing you bring up with Beto O'Rourke beating Ted Cruz. Man, would that be something. Even getting it, because I know a lot of people are pessimistic about the Democrats' chances of winning the Senate. I don't think a 50-50 margin is necessarily a bad thing. It's a good consolation prize because I think that puts a lot of pressure on Lisa Murkowski and her re-election chance, I believe, in 2022, because Republicans in Alaska are already completely ready to go after her. Sarah Palin's already sent threatening tweets and messages towards her. So you wonder if that might actually drive Lisa Murkowski to maybe even consider switching parties. Granted, she wouldn't exactly be a very effective Democrat, but at least would give them the majority, which I think is important. It's kind of the same thing I have with like people like Joe Manchin or Heidi Heitkamp. Even though they typically don't vote with Democrats a lot, they at least will still help you get that majority. That's some of the times where I'm okay with having some of these more moderate Democrats. It's more when you have moderate Democrats in places like New York or California or Illinois or even Minnesota, where I have a little bit more of an issue. But there, you got me going off on that now that you mentioned Beto O'Rourke. But I did want to mention one more thing you brought up to my attention regarding underestimating poll data. You emailed me this last week regarding the 1998 governor election, where I'm guessing, again, these pollsters probably underestimated likely voters. This was, of course, the three-way race between Humphrey Coleman and Jesse the Body Ventura. The polling data, which you said was from October 14th of 1998, this was an NPR poll. It had Skip Humphrey getting 44, Norm Coleman 31, Jesse Ventura only 15%. The results were pretty much in reverse of that. Humphrey, unfortunately, only got 28, Coleman got 34, and Ventura 37. I didn't go back and look at that polling methodology, but I'm guessing they probably missed a lot of those likely voters. Because if I remember correctly, I think it was Jesse Ventura getting a lot of young voters back in 1998. So maybe they missed a lot of young voters then, and they're probably going to miss a lot of young voters now, going back to what you're thinking.
Yeah, these polls, they predict what usually happens, but there are elections that are unusual where more people show up and they can't account for it. And that's what I'm seeing. So I'm not buying any of these numbers, and I'm just kind of observing the enthusiasm. And that's how I'm looking at the polls too, but taking that into account and seeing how enthusiastic people are in certain places.
And I kind of wonder, too, if that's what happened in 2016, especially in a lot of rural areas where they were probably underestimating rural voters in their support of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Because it was specifically in rural areas where they underestimated his support. Really, if you looked at the national popular vote, the polls pretty much got that right. They showed Hillary Clinton up by about 3 points, and I think she won by 2.5. But it was really in those local rural areas of like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania where Donald Trump really cleaned up. And you wonder if that's where maybe some of the pollsters had that discrepancy between registered and likely voters. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we're going to actually be switching gears and talking with Ellie Krug. You know her from Ellie 2.0 Radio. She is holding a public event on November 5th that you're invited to attend. If you're a big Ellie Krug fan, this is your chance to meet her in person. I know she's got a lot of fans on there, so make sure you stay tuned for the interview coming up next. We're going to give you more details, your chance to meet Ellie Krug and attend her Gray Area Thinking event. That's next on AM 950.
Hi, this is Paul Metza inviting you to listen to a great new episode on the Wall of Power Radio Hour this weekend. We interview Charles Pierce, who is one of the most astute liberal bloggers in America. He writes for Esquire.com. He's got a very handy Twitter site with 100,000 followers. We get caught up on all the hot political items of the day. And also, is there such a thing as a blue wave? Saturday at 6 p.m., Sunday at 4 p.m. on AM 950.
I'm Steve Conklin.
And I'm Jake DeRoff.
We're the hosts of the Mortgage Talk Show, Sundays at 12:30.
Every week, we bring you insights on home financing, discussing rates, programs, local and national news.
Whether you're buying your first home or your 100th home, we have tips and inside information to save you money and feel like a mortgage master.
Check us out for more information and email us any questions at mortgagetalkshow.com.
Tune in to the Mortgage Talk Show every Sunday at 12:30 on AM 950.
Fall in Minnesota is a time for comfort. Comfort foods, comfy sweaters. You can keep your home comfortable too with a new high-efficiency furnace from Standard Heating. If you get one in October, you can also enjoy at least $1,300 in savings. That'd buy a lot of pumpkin spice lattes. Learn more about saving $1,300 on your new furnace at standardheatingdeals.com. Don't wait. This sale ends October 31st. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Comfort you deserve.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is all digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Next time on Philosophy Talk, can reason save us?
Save us from what?
Demagogues, climate deniers, religious zealots. The forces of unreason are everywhere.
But disease and extreme poverty are down, while life expectancy, literacy, and equality are up. All triumphs of human reason.
So who's right?
We ask renowned cognitive scientist Steven Pinker.
Can reason save us? Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Philosophy Talk, every Sunday at 8 a.m. and again at 2 p.m. on AM 950.
Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is delighted to offer its spacious facilities for your private function. From weddings, retirement parties, business dinners, or any special occasion, Crooner's combines a dedicated full-service special events team, an award-winning chef, and a beautiful lakeside ambiance to make your event a resounding success. Visit croonersloungemn.com to learn more about their private dining options or call 763-571-9020 to get a quote for your next event today.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Hunter filling in today. Well, Ellie Krug is one of the voices you hear frequently on AM 950. She used to host Hidden Edges Radio and now, of course, hosts Ellie 2.0 Radio every Monday morning from 7 till 8. And there's a lot of listeners who are big fans of Ellie, and coming up in a couple weeks, you actually have a chance to meet Ellie in person. As you've probably heard on her show, outside of her radio show, she's also a professional public speaker and inclusivity trainer. And one of the signature trainings she gives is called Gray Area Thinking. And coming up on Monday, November 5th at Open Book in Minneapolis at 6:30, she's opening up her Gray Area Thinking to the public for the very first time. So definitely looking forward to that. It's your chance to not only meet Ellie in person, but also learn a little bit more about what she does. So joining us to talk about that public Gray Area Thinking event is none other than Ellie Krug. Ellie, it's great to talk with you.
Oh, thanks, Brett. I'm really thrilled to be able to have this conversation.
Well, it's kind of fun to be on the other side of the glass. Normally, I'm on the other side producing your show. Now we're both on the same side over here.
Well, you're a great producer, and I know you're going to be a great interviewer as well.
We'll see. Well, I have some big shoes to fill with all the interviews you've done.
Oh, well.
Well, let's start off with the very basics. Tell us, what exactly is gray area thinking?
Okay, so, you know, even though I'm transgender, I go around the country, North America, actually, and I speak at all kinds of organizations like governmental entities, like counties or cities or court systems or to businesses. You know, I've spoken at many of the major corporations here in the Twin Cities. I just going to speak, as this is day this is going to air, I'll be at Land's End out in Dodgeville speaking to them. And I talk about the need for humans on how to better interact with people who are quote-unquote different or other from us. So gray area thinking is a training on human inclusivity that is not LGBTQ focused. It's all human focused, and it's been widely and very well received across the country. But if you want, I can describe the training a little bit better than that, even.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But I want to know, how did you put this training together? What was kind of the genesis of the idea? Did you see a void in like corporate and organization training when it came to inclusivity and diversity that was missing?
Well, when I transitioned genders in 2009, people started asking me, what's it like to be transgender? And so I started, you know, doing just sort of off-the-cuff kind of talks. That turned into a very formal Trans 101 talk. But as I did that, I realized that there's actually a much bigger thirst out there for how people can better understand other humans just generally, how we can all get along better, not just transgender people. And so so I formulated this training. It's a product of my imagination. There's one element of the training that I grabbed from someone else with permission, and I've seriously modified it since then, but for the most part, it's all my imagination.
Excellent. How many years have you been doing it now?
So gray area thinking has been on the kind of on the shelf here for probably a good 5 years in one form or another, but every year it gets perfected better and there are new things that I add to it. So if somebody had been to gray area thinking 2 years ago, it's different than what they were 2 years went through.
Yeah, and again, this is the first time it's open to the public. I mean, normally it's closed to corporations or organizations, but this is a really big deal that anyone can come and see this.
That's right. So for example, in October, I will have talked to over 1,000 people, but all of those talks will be to a closed loops where it's an organization that brings me in, they hire me to come in, and certainly I'm speaking to their team members or constituents, but it's not open to the general public. This one is, and I'm really excited about that.
So let's get into the training itself. What sorts of tools do you use?
So the training has four modules to it. The first is how we group and label other humans. And I use my voice a little bit as a tool for that because, of course, I sound like a dude, but look like a chick. And that first module about how we group and label others is also about how we're a very tribal society. So I'll go through the room and I'll identify the tribes that exist in the room because we're all members of multiple tribes. Then after I have everybody thoroughly depressed, because it is depressing to think that that's the way we operate, I talk about our saving graces, which are one, our empathetic hearts, and then our second saving grace are what I call the four commonalities that humans have four things in common. That's the first module. The second module is how we group and label ourselves, and that's audience participation. I will have signs on the wall representing 19 different identities like age, race, gender, LGBTQ status. I have one sign that's for compassion, one that's for not good enough, one that's about political affiliations. I get people up and I read them prompts and I ask them to go stand by the sign that's responsive to them for the prompt. And you see people go stand by signs that you would never have expected people to do that. And that's with the principle that, first of all, you can never tell anything by anyone simply by looking at them. And secondly, the principle that we all have far more in common than what we really know. So that's very powerful. It's sometimes emotional for people. The third module is the actual tool set of gray area thinking. And I demonstrate that by showing a video of a bus driver who saves a woman from taking her life. We will watch that unfold on the screen. It's a happy video. The woman is saved. But that represents the three elements of gray area thinking: awareness, risk-taking, and compassion. And then the last module are the three levels of human inclusivity: tolerance, acceptance, and party host. And I'll bring up audience members and we'll do a little bit of role playing and we'll demonstrate those. We have fun. We have laughs. What I consistently hear about this training is that it went way faster than I expected. I didn't even want to look at my phone.
Always a good thing, yeah, when you go. Yeah, because, I've worked in the corporate world myself before radio, and you get those training sessions. Yeah, you are kind of looking at your phone saying, I got something better to do. I don't want to be this. I got a meeting.
And I never hear that. Mm-hmm. I never, ever hear that from my trainings. So.
And you talk about how you're surprised by some of the reactions people have, or when you were talking about kind of the grouping and labeling where you put people under different labels. One of the specific stories that kind of stuck with me that I think you brought up, it was either Hidden Edges or Ellie 2.0, how I I think you were speaking with a group of Iowa judges, and they went under these different categories. And you were just, can you get into a little more detail about that? I don't remember the exact story, but it was really powerful when I heard
So I trained the state of Iowa judiciary, 160 judges and Supreme Court justices, including the Chief Justice. And when we got to the second module of the training, how we group and label ourselves, one of the prompts I ask is the identity that I struggle with the most on a day-to-day basis, because this is about you, okay? And when I asked that prompt to 160 judges and justices, out of 160, 40 stood under the sign, not good enough / failure. 40 out of 160. And as I do this training across North America, somewhere between a quarter and half the room are standing under that sign, not good enough, in response to the prompt, the identity I struggle with, which is just so incredibly powerful to see. It's also very sad when we think about how much we're beating ourselves up. And that's why this training is emotional for some people, because it's opening doors for them to make them think about things that they hadn't thought about. And that's the whole goal, because it's not been working by thinking the same way that we've been doing. We need to think differently. And some of that's uncomfortable, but it's good uncomfortable.
We're speaking with Ellie Krug, of course, the host of Ellie 2.0 Radio. And again, she has a public event coming up, Gray Area Thinking, the first time that's ever been made available to the public. You can get your tickets at it's elliekrug.com, correct?
Or they can just Google Eventbrite Gray Area Thinking, Eventbrite tickets, Gray Area Thinking, and it'll come up. It's going to be at Open Book at 6:30 to 8:30 on November 5th, the night before the election.
The day before the election, easy date to remember, so definitely make sure you go and attend. So let's talk a little bit about some of the other reactions you've received from people. I mean, it's been kind of all over the board. Even people who go into this, you know, kind of with a negative attitude saying, well, this is a waste of time. I don't
absolutely
want to go through this. Yeah.
Absolutely. I have people come up to me who say, you know, I didn't want to be here. You know, they made me come, you know, and then what they say to me is, I'm so happy that I went through this. It was not what I expected, you know, and what I believe, Brett, is that in order for us to change the way that we interact with each other, in order, you know, remember, I'm an idealist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I believe to fulfill that idealism is, I just don't think commanding people to think differently is going to work. You know, you're going to not, you know, be biased against somebody, or you're going to treat them more nicer, or you're not going to marginalize. That does not work. However, if we inspire them, it will work. So I was in San Francisco just last week, training a group of lawyers at a conference, and I had a woman who came up to me because in the last prompt of that second module, the identity game where people stand under signs, the last module asks this question, which is, the last prompt is the identity I want to be known for. Had 110 people in the room. Out of 110 people, all but two stood under one of two signs, compassion or family. And out of those two, the vast majority, I would say there were 70 or 80 people under compassion. And this woman came up to me and she started crying, and she said, Ellie, I would never have believed that all but two in that room would want compassion to be the identity that they would be known for. Because family is also about compassion. Family is no longer about blood. It's about affinity. I mean, I've been best friends, as your listeners, our listeners have heard, been best friends with somebody since eighth grade. I'm part of his family. And she started crying, and she said, we have to move away from here. Will you walk with me so we can go to a place? And then she just went to outright bawling. When we found a place, a quiet, I had to wrap my arms around her. And she just said, you've given me hope. I haven't been able to get hope for such a long time, and this has given me hope. All but two under compassion.
Wow. That, all but two. That's unbelievable to think
no,
about.
No, Brett, and I guarantee you, when people come to the training on Monday night, when I ask that last prompt, the identity that we want to be known for, the identity I want to be known for, that almost everybody in the room will be under one or another sign related to compassion. And that's the story behind this training, because we all we hear is division in our country right now, how we're at each other's backs and all of that stuff. There are people standing under compassion that are blue people, red people, Bernie people. No, the story that no one understands is that we all want to be good to each other. Yes, there are those people that are out there making noise about marginalizing and all that, but they are such a small minority. That's why this training is so important. That's why it's so powerful, because it gets everybody to understand that we all are trying to survive the human condition and we all want to be good to each other. We do, regardless of color, regardless of religion, regardless of LGBTQ or socioeconomic standing.
So finally, before we go, what ultimately do you want people, I know you've kind of addressed this earlier, what do you want people to take away from attending Gray Area Thinking? What's the main thing you want them to walk away with?
I want them to walk away with understanding that we are all working to survive the human condition, and that there is no way that you can tell the extent to which somebody is surviving or not surviving simply by looking at them.
And I think the timing of this is so great, too, before a very divisive election.
Yep.
I mean, we're in the era of Trump and people to see so much division, and hopefully this is a way to really bridge that divide and get people thinking that, you know, even if someone is other, you have a lot in common with them.
We do. And that this is really what America is about, Brett. It's about the ideals of our country that we will, you know, that we will believe in the character of human beings. Compassion. You can't get to any better piece of character than that.
Absolutely. Again, we're speaking with Ellie Krug of Ellie 2.0 Radio. She's got a public event with Gray Area Thinking coming up on Monday, November 5th. I know there are lots of Ellie Krug fans on AM 950. This is your chance to meet Ellie in person and hear a little bit about what she does. A really cool event coming up. Give us the details one more time and how people can get tickets.
So to be Monday, November 5th, the night before the election, from 6:30 to 8:30 at Open Book on Washington Avenue in Minneapolis. There's plenty of parking. They need to go to Eventbrite, the Google Eventbrite Gray Area Thinking, and the registration and the ticket. The ticket is, I think, $18.50. It's not a whole lot of money for 2 hours of inspiration and hope.
Absolutely. Really looking forward to that. Again, we've been speaking with Ellie Krug of Ellie 2.0 Radio. And make sure you register for Gray Area Thinking Monday, November 5th. Ellie, thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me, Brett. I really appreciate it.
And really, make sure you check out that event. It's really inspiring. I've heard so many great stories about people who have had positive experiences from going to Gray Area Thinking. And the first time it has ever been opened up to the public. Make sure you buy those tickets, not only to get that great training, but if you're a big Ellie Krug fan, that is your chance to meet her. So check that out. Go to elliekrug.com, and you'll find more information to purchase those tickets coming up on Monday, November 5th at 6:30 in Minneapolis at Open Book. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we're going to talk about when Republicans were actually the progressive party in Minnesota. It's on the way next, AM 950.
Who draws the crowd? Who plays so loud? Baby, it's the guitar man.
I'm John Peterson of Ferndale Market, and I'm the third generation to grow turkeys on our family farm in Cannon Falls. We've grown them the same way since 1939, free range and without antibiotics. We're proud of the way our turkey tastes naturally, so we don't add a thing, just 100% pure turkey. Reserve your free range Thanksgiving turkey today for pickup at our store right on the farm in scenic Cannon Falls or at one of our metro retail partners. Visit us at ferndalemarket.com for more information or to reserve your turkey today.
Hello, humans. It's Ellie Krug with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many know that I have a diversity and inclusion company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I want to share about a speaking event I'll be hosting on Monday, November 5th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Loft Literary Center in Minneapolis. I'll be giving my Gray Area Thinking talk on how to be welcoming to others. I'd love for you to join me. Go to elliekrug.com and look at the Human is Human public events page for more. Please come and please tell others. See you then.
Hello, fellow AM 950 listeners. This is Jaja from Nightingale at 26 in Lindale. Come experience our delicious signature dishes and exciting rotation of inventive seasonal fare for my wife and chef, Carrie, and her team. Nightingale is the perfect place to gather for any occasion with our extensive wine, beer, and cocktail selection, along with our dedication to great service. We offer a full menu every day from 4 to 1 a.m., two award-winning daily happy hours, and weekend brunch at 10. More at nightingalempls.com.
Native Earth Radio is proud to announce we're adding an extra hour.
1 hour's too fast.
That's right, Uncle Curtis.
Great. More time for me to share important information about our sacred animals.
And report national native news with reporters all around the country. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m.
We are awake.
Find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and streaming live on Facebook.
Guess who called me the other day? You did. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld of Computer Revolution in Roseville. I want to thank AM950 listeners who called to thank us for supporting the station. So here's an offer exclusive to 950 listeners. Bring your broken computer or cell phone to our Roseville store, say I'm an AM950 listener, and you'll receive $20 off any repair. Computer Revolution with Cell Phone Repair, located in Roseville at Highway 36 and Fairview Avenue, or call 651-633-6600. And thanks.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 56. Tonight clear with a low around 31. Tuesday sunny with a high near 46. And Wednesday sunny with a high around 49. Cafe Latte is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They're a gourmet cafeteria with an ever-changing selection of award-winning salad sandwiches and soups, plus they have no artificial colors, flavors, or preservatives. Cafe Latte is located on Victoria and Grand in St. Paul. Details at eatlocalminnesota.com. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett and Hunter on your Monday afternoon. So MinnPost put out an interesting article last week that's highlighting a book by former Republican Senator of Minnesota, Dave Durenberger, and the title is something that will make shock kind of a few of our listeners, especially some of our right-leaning listeners. The title of the book is called When Republicans Were Progressive. It actually highlights the history of how the Republican Party in Minnesota went from being a very progressive party back in the 1930s especially, and really veered towards the right in the 70s and 80s till they pretty much had a complete takeover of the party in the 1990s. And one of the reasons this article kind of stuck out at me, not just because of the title, but because I'm thinking back actually to my grandma, who kind of got me into politics back in the early 2000s. She passed back in 2012, but she was a lifelong Republican, very active in the party in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But things started to change with her kind of in the 90s when she started to warm up a little bit towards Bill Clinton. Then when we hit W in 2000, she absolutely could not stand him. And then by the time we got to Obama, she was pretty much a full-fledged Democrat. Now, she wasn't like a Bernie Sanders Democrat or anything, but she, you know, was one of the more progressive Republicans. She was a big supporter of Ron Earhart, who actually lived in her district. And I know she was really annoyed when Keith Downey knocked him out. Ron Earhart was, of course, a Republican representative who actually switched to the DFL later in his career. But it kind of got me thinking, was how did she used to be a Republican and then become so dissatisfied for the party? And, you know, this article kind of hit home for me, you know, talking about how Republicans actually used to be the progressive party in Minnesota. So going back to this book that Durenberger wrote that is out now, you can get that book where books are sold, and hopefully we're going to try to get Durenberger on the program as well. But he talks about how the origins of this progressive movement in the Republican Party started back in 1938 with a governor by the name of Harold Stassen. And he tells us that Stassen did not intend to reverse the Farmer Labor Party's success and any aspects of the New Deal. Instead, what they wanted to do was actually incorporate and make a lot of these policies that were done by the Farmer Labor Party, which was, of course, a third party here in Minnesota, which was very progressive. They wanted to do a lot of those policies, but with more transparency. Durenberger, this is a quote from the article, clearly views himself within the Stassen progressive tradition, and that tradition, he explains, stood not for big or small government, but for effective government. Isn't that refreshing to hear? That it wasn't about big government or small government with the Republicans back in the early days. It was more about effective government. It prized government not for its own sake, but as a practical tool for creating conditions that were allowing its citizens to thrive. It nurtured a sense of responsibility for the common good in both citizens and elected officials. It provided keen competition for other political parties while respecting its rivals' contribution to the whole. It held that working across the aisle as well as across the country was a mark of strength and not weakness or disloyalty. Isn't that kind of nice to hear? We don't hear about that at all with today's Republican Party, where it's all win, win, win. We have to shrink government. We have to drown it in a bathtub, going back to that quote from Grover Norquist. But that's how the Republican Party actually used to be. It wasn't about big government or shrinking the size. It was making effective and efficient government, which is why I think so many people were actually Republicans back in like the 60s or 70s and really left the party once we got hit the 80s and 90s.
So one reason, because I also have been looking into this a lot recently, one reason for that is that the Republican Party has always been the pro-business party, mm-hmm. but back in those days, it was better for a larger federal government and for government programs for businesses to exist and to grow. And it was that later on it became that they wanted to deregulate things. Mm. So that's one explanation why. It's they have always been the pro-business party, but what was good for business in their eyes at back then was different than now.
Yeah, yeah, much different. I mean, I think especially when Reagan took office in the 1980s, things changed. And then you're looking at what was that 80s movie with you know, where he made the greed is good speech. I think that kind of had Wall Street. Yeah, that kind of had an impact on how that conservative movement really started to think about business back in that era. But Durenberger also makes the argument in his book that things also started to change for the Republican Party in Minnesota with, of course, the Roe v. Wade decision back in 1973, which, of course, legalized abortions during the first two trimesters of pregnancy. And Durenberger, who actually was an opponent of abortion himself, observed that the ruling actually ruptured a political hornet's nest, especially in Minnesota. As before the Roe versus Wade ruling, it was actually the DFL that had a major anti-abortion faction, while the Republicans included a significant group of pro-choice supporters, but soon advocates on both sides of this very divisive issue would soon sort themselves according to their political identity, with, of course, the anti-abortion faction moving to the Republican Party and the pro-choice side moving onto the DFL side. So that's also an argument he makes, that it really was the Roe versus Wade ruling that also kind of divided the party. And I know, going back to my grandma, that was the very issue that really started moving her away from the Republicans, is that even though, as I said, she wasn't like a big pro-Bernie person, she also was pro-choice, and that really drove her away from the Republicans, saying they got too focused on social issues, you know, especially after that 1973 Roe v. Wade decision.
It's interesting because it was the Republicans were for a long time for civil rights and for, and it's very confusing how this happened. It's not just one thing. So, like, yeah. I mentioned that they were pro-business, but there's multiple things going on and why this shift happened. And it was the Voters' Right Act that the Democrats supported, that the Republicans saw an opportunity to rebrand. That's like the biggest, the easiest.
Yeah, you're talking in the 60s. Yeah. Where almost that Southern strategy that Nixon used, correct?
Yeah, that's the easiest thing to pinpoint, but it's still not super clean because there were still these, up until the 80s, really, Republicans that were still the civil rights mind or just still more progressive than Republicans of today.
And I still love that map you printed out when we interviewed the professor from, was it McAllister or St. Olaf?
Yeah.
Where you printed the Electoral College map from, I forgot how many years ago.
16, so yeah. About a little over 100 years.
Yeah, it was in the exact reverse of what it looks like now, where all the blue states were in the south and all the red states were in the north.
It was a total, basically, invert of what was red and blue states. Almost every state is you would call the opposite nowadays.
You and I have always been, kind of fascinated by this discussion. We're probably going to continue it as we fill in. We'll hopefully get your professor back on and maybe get more information about that switch. And I'd also like to get Durenberger on the program, Senator Dave Durenberger, on to talk about his book, When Republicans Were Progressive, because I just find that really interesting, because no one in this day and age would mistake any Republican in Minnesota for being progressive when you got Doug Wardlow and Jeff Johnson and Hagedorn at the top of the ticket. And who else am I missing? Pete Stauber up in CD8, a big Trump supporter. So it'd be an interesting conversation to have, I think.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to see is why the Farmer Labor Party didn't possibly merge with the Republicans back then, because it seemed like they kind of got along. But I don't know. That's another thing I'd like to know more about.
There we go. I think we got another interview we got to look at coming up here with either a professor or Durenberger or someone out there. Of course, if you have thoughts on this as well, give us a call, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, especially if you're one of our older listeners out there. Do you remember an era where Republicans in Minnesota actually used to be progressive? I mean, even thinking outside of Stassen, and Arnie Carlson comes to mind as kind of being the last progressive Republican. And he's actually in the news as well, endorsing Dean Phillips, which we'll actually talk about in just a few minutes. So any thoughts, give us a call, 952-946-6205. And up next, we will talk about Arnie Carlson and his endorsement of Dean Phillips. We'll also touch on Doug Wardlow sending out an accidental tweet last night, as well as Jason Lewis getting in some hot water as well. That's on the way next on AM 950.
Are you worried because the pain, numbness, tingling, or burning in your feet never seems to go away? You may feel like Lyrica or gabapentin never seem to fix your problem. Many of you are concerned because your sleep, walking, and balance problems are only getting worse. At Woodbury and Plymouth Neuropathy Care, we've helped thousands of patients reverse their neuropathy symptoms without harmful drugs or painful injections.
I had a lot of tingling in my feet, and my legs were extremely hot.
So then you went through our neuropathy program. What has changed about your feet?
Oh my gosh, the tingling is gone. I don't feel any tingling at all. That's a big relief, because now I can sleep all night. Just been very happy with the treatment. Got good results. It's truly a life changer.
Call Woodbury and Plymouth Neuropathy Care today to schedule your free neuropathy severity consultation to see if our treatment methods are right for you. Call 763-325-4998. That's 763-325-4998. 763-325-4998.
Hey, Ole, how's that bumper crop of soybeans working out?
Oh, cripes, not well, Sven. If only I had a patch of reefer to get by on.
Well, did you catch that Grassroots Party commercial quoting from our state constitution? Get this. Any person may sell or peddle the products of the farm or garden occupied and cultivated by him without obtaining a license therefor.
Oh, what does that mean?
Means you really should have planted some cannabis. You see, under the Controlled Substances Law, what's actually illegal is being in possession without a license. But if you're selling what you've cultivated, the Constitution says you don't need any license.
Does the governor know about this?
He sure will, if we vote Chris Wright and Duda Schwartzbacher in the governor's race. They've got Noah Johnson for Attorney General, too.
Boy, cannabis makes you cough, but politics makes you gag. This year, I'm gonna vote Wright for governor.
Paid for by the Grassroots Legalized Cannabis Party.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So a couple of miscellaneous pieces of news and notes before we wrap up the program today. Also, you can give us a call at 952-946-6205. Big endorsement in CD3 as Arnie Carlson has fully endorsed Dean Phillips for Congress. That is despite the fact that Dean Phillips is a DFLer and Arnie Carlson is, of course, a Republican and probably one of the last progressive Republicans we've had in Minnesota. This is part of his endorsement. You can read the full thing over at the Phillips website, the full endorsement written by Arnie Carlson. But he says, quote, his latest ad, in reference to Eric Paulson's, maligns some of the most prominent members of the Twin Cities philanthropic community. The real purpose of these attack ads is to take attention away from the fact that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell prepared budgets that will significantly slash health care, Medicare, and Social Security. I proudly served as your Republican's governor, and now I'm proudly supporting the Dean Phillips campaign. That is quite a get for Dean Phillips to get the endorsement of Arne Carlson. Another miscellaneous news story for you. This one is kind of funny. In fact, Hunter actually caught this one from last night, posting it on our Facebook page. But apparently, Doug Ward, though, kind of sent out an accidental tweet yesterday around noon. And basically, it was, well, Hunter picked it up, but it was actually originally posted by the Exposing Doug Wardlow Twitter account. So Doug Wardlow sent this tweet out. I think this was done automatically because he signed up for some weird service, which apparently deletes your old tweets. Mm-hmm. It says, I just activated @tweetdelete on my account to automatically delete my old tweets. Then it has a link to the website. Isn't it great that he accidentally sends this thing out?
I hope someone caught before it and was able to download all of his tweets to see what he was trying to get rid of.
Oh, there's got to be a ton there. Yeah. I mean, even just looking at the Exposing Doug Wardlow website, there's all sorts of stuff saying how the American Constitution is failing because of the gay marriage ruling by the Supreme Court back in, what was it, 2012 or 2013. Of course, there's tweets about him believing in a second constitution, one that's actually above the real constitution we have. But I kind of see how this happens, too, because when I first got into Twitter, I signed up for this service, which would alert you when someone unfollowed you. And, of course, when I signed up for this service, it automatically sent out a tweet on my behalf saying I signed up for it. So I'm thinking that's exactly what happened to Doug Wardlow. So I'm glad someone was able to screen cap that, because if you look at Wardlow's Twitter account right now, it's nowhere on there. He deleted that tweet, which is kind of ironic that he signed up for a service that would delete his old tweets. Then he got rid of the tweet saying he signed up for the service. Found that kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's a good catch, by the way.
Yeah, I can't believe that he's still trying to be the apolitical candidate after getting caught with the would fire all Democrats in that debate. He really was pushing that again for every issue.
I wonder why he's even going with that strategy, because I would think just at this point you're running against, well, unfortunately, kind of a vulnerable opponent in Keith Ellison. I just go all in a Republican and try to increase your voter turnout. So we'll see if that ends up being a bad strategy for him.
Well, I think he's trying to pick off some people that won't vote for Keith Ellison by not ever talking about where he stands on anything.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that plays out. And finally, one more thing. Jason Lewis is in more hot water due to old radio tapes, as he said, quote, back on one of his radio shows in reference to sexual assault laws. As you know, I was a vociferous defender of Mr. Cain, referencing Herman Cain being sued for sexual harassment, because I detest sexual harassment law. I don't want to be callous here, but how traumatizing was it? How many women at some point in their life had a man come on them, place their hand somewhere on their shoulder or even on their thigh, kiss them, and they would rather not have it happen? But is that really something that's going to be searched in your memory and that you'll be needing therapy for, unquote? That is the quote from Jason Lewis.
You know what would be a funny idea is for us to air old Jason Lewis tapes on the station so people could find all the horrible things he said on that show.
Yeah. I didn't have time to read the entire quote. Kind of had to speed through it since we're at the end of the show. But basically, he's saying that sexual assault is not traumatizing for women. That's Jason Lewis for you, and hopefully that guy gets defeated as well, coming up in 2 weeks by Angie Craig. Brett and Hunter on AM 950. Hunter's in the hosting chair tomorrow here on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.